I know I'm speaking to alumni from Eshet Torah, and decided to talk about, let's talk about a real topic. You know, let's talk about a something relevant and personal and significant and so important. Just a moment about who I am. I am a rabbi, Avraham Lilly. I'm also a psychotherapist, and I do a lot of work with couples and marital therapy. And therefore, this area of the area of love and relationships is an area of particular interest to me, because you know I see all of Torah Judaism really as a relationship. More about that a different time. All of life as a relationship, and the relationships all around us. So the Torah gives so much wisdom, godly wisdom, deep wisdom about love and relationships. Of course, Judaism is a religion of love, right? The two big, arguably biggest verses in the Torah, Ve'ahavta, you should love, Ve'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, love God, Ve'ahavta L'recha Kamocha, you should love other human beings, about which the Talmud directs that verse specifically in regards to marriage, in regards to a spousal love. So, Ve'ahavta L'recha Kamocha applies to marriage more powerfully and more deeply than any other love. So, it most certainly, Judaism has so much to say about love. And of course, in the world of the helping profession and relationships, so my training and my work, you know, it also informs my thinking and guides me. And the topic of today's talk is love insurance. Love insurance, how to protect your marriage from emotional damage. And this talk is for married and unmarried people. It's not just for men, it's for women as well. So you don't have to like kick your, you know, like tell the wives to get out of here. And the title, Love Insurance, is, I don't know, these are the those words came to me, and I don't know, I like the way they sound. I like the way that you know, those two words sound. Love insurance, love insurance. And I was actually like, wondering what, like, usually we have something, you know, creative or you know, interesting thought. Like, someone thought of it before. So I Googled love insurance. Someone, like, obviously has a whole company, you know. Like, what is it? So love insurance, what came up is some guy named Richard Love who has an insurance company in Woodmere. Like, Woodmere, this is Woodmere, Ohio, on Chagrin Boulevard. Okay, just to make things interesting. So that's the name of this guy's insurance. He sells whatever life insurance. The business of love and relationships. And when I mentioned this phrase to someone, they said to me, well, you know, like, what does that mean, insurance? Like, if everything goes wrong, you know, that's what insurance means. You know, like, I'll, here's something, like, here's a plan I could buy. If everything goes wrong, I'll crash my car, but you say, not exactly. That's not my thinking. Here's a way to mess up your marriage and, you know, and be able to, like, make a comeback. It's not at all what I mean. You know, it's the concept of protection, right? Insurance is about protection, to protect yourself from something bad. Right? What I'm calling love insurance is about prevention, right? An effort to prevent yourself and your spouse from experiencing heartache. Right? Benjamin Franklin very wisely and famously wrote, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Right? An old-fashioned saying, but such wisdom. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I end up seeing things that arrive in my office that are horrible. I'm like, oh my gosh, where were you 5 years ago? Where were you 10 years ago? Where were you 5 months ago? Right? So I'd like to talk about today, in my short time, it's not a very long lecture, are really two main points. Two main points. Number one, I'm just highlighting two things that I feel really fit in the category of what I would describe as love insurance. If you have them, develop these, if you understand these two things, and you're able to work them into your life, into your marriage, you'll be all that much happier. It's my guarantee. All right. Two points, unrelated points. Number one is about gender differences and understanding your spouse understanding your spouse. Number two, which I hope to get to at the end, is communication and relationship tension. Okay, two different categories, two different points highlighted in regards to the marital relationship. Let's get started. Number one, gender differences, understanding your spouse. Let's begin with what we would call in yeshiva, inyana diyoma. Inyana diyoma means like, you know, the relevant current events, the issues of the day. What is happening in the Jewish calendar right now? We are up to the holiday of Purim. Okay, this is not, this lecture was not specifically timed for this, but it came to me as an obvious an obvious entry point. Very soon, just a couple of weeks, the Jewish people dress up, and of course, most famously, young school children dress up, and we will see them on the streets in our neighborhoods. It's like the Jewish, you know, it sounds like the Jewish Halloween, but you know, the Jewish boys and girls and all different schools are dressing up in you know, Purim costumes. Now, stop and take a moment to observe. That's something we normally would do, but take a moment to observe. How do most people dress up? What do people dress up? These little boys, these little girls, already from the age of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, right? What do they dress up as? Classically, what do guys and girls, boys and girls, dress up as, right? Here we go. Well, the girls. It's like mostly the same concept, the same theme, right? You know already, right? If I could really speak to you, I would. Girls dress up as princesses. This one's a Queen Esther. This one's a different queen, right? Here's a fancy lady, right? This other girl dresses up as a bride, a kala, right? And they're all like these glamorous, splendorous, beautifully dressed up, made up girls, like beyond, you know, obviously beyond their age, and it's cute and it's funny, and they're only 5 years old and they're full of makeup, you know, and they're wearing these puffed out dresses and these like really glamorous things. Now, that's how girls dress up. Okay, and how do the guys dress up? Stop them to think about it. Well, they are the policemen, right? The soldiers. That's how they dress up. You know, the cowboy, the ninja, right? The guy would be like the Hatzalah guy, right? Superman, superheroes in general. Stop and consider that the observation of gender differences already as young children is remarkable. It's actually an incredibly accurate reflection of the deep psychological realities and needs. The deep psychological realities and needs of both genders, male and female, men, boys and girls, men and women. Let's begin with women. What is it that women need? A direct question. What is it that women long for? What do they want? What is their deep need? What does every woman dream for? What does she need more than anything? Look at these little girls. Oh, you're sending me a message. Someone's sending, I can't see it. Someone writes, the world will never know. Okay, guys, I said this for men and women. The world will never know. Well, let me try to help. Look at those girls. Look how it's so deep in their psyche from their very young age. Why are they all dressed up that way? My little daughter, this is true, my little daughter, she is 4 years old. It was this Friday, this Shabbos, this Friday night. She says to me, the best part of my whole week is that today on Friday, Ima let me put on makeup on me. I went to put on makeup. Lipstick. She was wearing lipstick. She's 4 years old, right? She was just fooling around, right? And she asked my wife, "So lipstick? Why put on lipstick?" She's like, "Why in the world? She's 4 years old. Where did she get that from? Right? What is that? Where does that come from? It's in the innate reality of a woman, and that is a woman longs to feel beautiful." She longs to feel beautiful. There's no judgment here. I'm not trying to be politically incorrect or correct. I just, It's for a different time. It's not my area. It's not my interest. I don't care about that. I care about the human condition. I care about the psychological realities of human beings. And the reality is that women long, deeply, deeply long to feel beautiful, to feel fancy, to feel dressed up. They want to be the doll, right? Guys and dolls, right? That's what they want. That's what they long for. That's what they need. Okay, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. And what do guys long for? Right? They want to be the policeman, you know, the savior, the warrior, the powerful, you know, hero. They want to be the hero. That's what they long to be. That's what they need to be. That's like, oh, that's I'm the guy. I'm the guy. I'm the hero. Right? It's like this microcosm. This little superhero guy. Right? That's the whole story of the guy, that little boy. That's what he longs for. He wants to, like, make his mark. He wants to be strong. You know, he wants to be a geber. What does geber mean? Well, in Hebrew, the word geber is the referred to a man. Geber comes from the word gevura, power. A man longs for power. It's not bad. It's not ugly. It's just a reality. A man longs for, you know, strength to accomplish and be a hero. That's what every man needs. And what every woman needs to feel beloved and cherished. So let's stop. Let's make that a reality. You know, in a Jewish, under the law, every man in Jewish marriage literally writes a marriage document. It is a legal document. They don't just swear and affirm, right? They write it out. It's often signed by the groom. It's a legal document. Most people don't understand it because it's written in Aramaic. And in the document, it says, "I'm the okir, the eflach. I will cherish. You will be my beloved, right? I will support you, but I just give you what you need physically. I will give you what you need emotionally. I will cherish you, right? I will show you that you are precious to me." I will show my fondness of you. Okay? So, let's start with the deep reality and the deep need of a woman to feel that she is attractive, is beautiful in the eyes of her husband. Every woman, again, this is cross-cultural and it's universal. Just go check it out for yourself. Just walk down the street. Every woman, right, when she passes a mirror, she will stop. Now, you walk out walking with my wife, and I'm walking and walking, and like I'm talking, we're talking, suddenly, my wife's not there. I'm like, where is she? I turn around, I see, you know, 30 feet earlier, there was a mirror. There was like a store with a mirror. That's it. There she is. That's how women are. All women. Why is that? Why is it the women stop to look at themselves and the men don't? Because women are hypersensitive about how they look. Do they look, and they have to check for themselves. Hey, do I look pretty? They need to reassure themselves. They themselves, right? You know, if anyone ever has a wife and is going out to a wedding, you know you're not going anywhere until the woman feels that she looks pretty. Well, here's the news. You can help her. You can help her. And that is by letting her know how beautiful she is. Tell her that she's pretty. Tell her why you married her. Tell her that you are attracted to her. She is wondering the unspoken question, am I beautiful in my husband's eyes? Does my husband think I am beautiful? Every woman, you maybe told her a million times, it doesn't make a difference. It's a question that she's asking. Do I satisfy my husband? Do I or don't I? Is he attracted to me? Am I beautiful? Right? Look at yesterday's Parsha. Parsha Sashivua. About mirrors. Right? The mirrors were used in the temple because of their great spiritual loftiness. Why? Moshe says, why? They, women are making themselves up, you know, making themselves look beautiful. Why does that belong in the temple? God says, Moshe, you got it all along. This is like the greatest thing. Not only is it great for the marriage, it's the greatest kindness. These mirrors help the woman, help these Jewish women feel beautiful. There's no greater kindness that you can do for a woman than to Help her feel beautiful. Remind her that she's beautiful. Gentlemen, you want to be successful in your marriage. You think it's small. I'm telling you it's not. Remind your wife. Show her that you think she's beautiful. Point number one. Point number two. Yeah, the expression, I love you. Now, here's the old, Yeshiva joke, right? A guy heard from his Rebbe, and he has to tell his wife that he loves her. Great, so he gets married. He sits down with her the day after they get married. He says, listen, hey, I want to let you know I love you. Okay, and I'll let you know if there are any changes, but if I don't say anything otherwise, trust me, I love you. So when I say that to a group, a mixed group, right, the women die laughing, and the men are like, yeah, what, that makes a lot of sense, right? No, it doesn't, because women, they themselves need reassurance. They wonder, right? We sign in the Ksuba. I am going to be with you forever, forever, till the end of my life. I will cherish you and watch over you. God forbid, I will never abandon you. God forbid, I will never leave you. I will cherish you forever, right? But maybe if a man thinks that, that's nice. A woman needs to hear that every single day. You are, number one, you are beautiful in my eyes. Number two, I love you. I know it sounds too simple, but it's, try it. You will see. I love you, right? Every single day, I love you. Not only that, she wants to know, does he love me? Does he love my clothing? Does he love my food? Right? Say it. Remind her. It's the unspoken question. She is not resolved. It won't be resolved, and she will not be calm and reassured. It's a big word here. Reassured until you say it again. Every single day, say it again. I know when I sit down to dinner, I've been married for 23 years, and sit down to dinner, right? And I make the mistake of forgetting this for a moment or getting distracted. I'm at the dinner table for 2 minutes, and my wife's, I don't know where she's doing, she got up, or she went to the kitchen. I will hear the question come across the room. So how's the chicken? I'm like, oh man, I messed up, right? She beat me. Like, what's she asking, right? Can you confirm that my food is good, right? Which it is. So I know it's okay. So here we go. That is what women need. That's why they dress up. They want to be noticed. They want to feel beloved and cherished and fancy. Do your wife a favor and give her what she needs. Give her what she needs. Notice her. She wants you to notice her. Give her what she needs and she will be happy. Give her what she needs and she will be satisfied. That's it. Then you can rest easy. And many husbands come to me and say, why is my wife nagging me so much? She's bothering me about this and that. I'm like, no, it's a mistake. You're not really giving her what she needs. If you give her what she needs, she won't bother you. She can't tell you to say, hey, tell me I'm beautiful. Tell me I'm attractive. Tell me you love me. Tell me you love my dress. Tell me you love my food. She can't say that, right? Anyway, all right. So for the guys who are like, ha ha, don't look down on the women. It's your turn, okay? What do men need? What do us men need? Let's be totally brutally honest here. Men wonder. They wonder to themselves, do I have value? All men. Am I important? That's what they're thinking about. Men ask themselves, am I successful? Right? Am I respectable? Who respects me? Who respects me? Does anyone look up to me? Who looks up to me? Right? Now, sure, men are all macho and idiot. It's all cute, but it's not the truth. The truth is that men need assurance. They need reassurance and emotional confirmation that they are successful, that they are powerful, period. All men need that. And you know what? Men will go to the end of the world, will do anything, anywhere, to try to get that feeling, right? It's just the way God made them. No one's making fun of anyone. It's just a reality. No reason to be embarrassed or apologetic. It's just a reality. Men, God created men. They're together. They need to feel that they have gvura, strength. They need to feel powerful. Okay, so that's what men need. A wise woman, a smart and informed woman, will be sure to reassure her husband that he is successful. You are successful. you are powerful. You are, you know, you're a great breadwinner. You are a great husband. You are a great father, right? We're happy with you. I'm satisfied with you. Sometimes, I have to tell you, men come to me, right? And they, I hear the complaint. Sometimes that their marriages are so strained because their wives are never happy. Their wives are never happy. There's always this and that. And men report to me like, I can't deal with that. Like, nothing I do is good enough. And I find such significant and important wisdom and advice for women. Sure, no one's saying that we can never be critical of our spouses. I don't believe that. I think that we could be critical of our spouses. But that's after giving our spouses what they need. A man needs to feel powerful. Period. A male needs to feel successful. Look at the animal kingdom. Now humans are not animals, but still there's a concept of being, this is my house, this is my territory, right? I'm the geber, right? Look at the world. Look at the world, right? Now unfortunately some human animals pick up their weapons, right, and have to show how strong they are in an unhealthy way. We don't want that. We don't want that. But a smart woman will come home and remind her husband, wow, what a good daddy you are. What a great husband you are. What a great, you know, employee you are, right? What a great career you have, right? I'm so satisfied with you, right? This is the concept of guys and dolls, right? Brave heroes. The guys need to be the hero, right? So make your husband, women should make their husband a hero, and guys should make their wives their pretty princesses. That's what we have. Brave heroes and pretty princesses. Guys and dolls, right? So how should the conversation go? A successful couple, right? A guy turns to his wife, he says, honey, you're so beautiful. Right? And she looks up at him, looks back at him, and she says, darling, you're so successful. That's it. That is it. And some people say, I can't believe it's true. I say, try it. Try it and you will see. If you give a man what he needs, he's happy. If you give a woman what she needs, she's happy in the relationship. That is a simple but very deep. And I want to tell you something. Findings show, God forbid, in the study of infidelity, okay, extramarital affairs, God forbid, they're all over the world, right? God should protect us from these things. They're all over the world. But if you study them, extramarital affairs almost always begin with what we'll call emotional affairs. Emotional affairs. It means a guy is not getting what he needs. He's not getting what he needs at home. He comes to work, and, you know, there's a girl there. There's a coworker. There's a secretary who says, wow, you're so strong. Wow, you're so smart. Wow, you're so powerful. You really know what you're doing, right? You really, like, wow, you're really good at what you do. Whoa, right? And she's feeding on the male ego. But there's nothing wrong with that. There's a reality. A guy is a giver. There's nothing wrong. No reason to apologize, right? So if that guy is not being satisfied at home, he will. That's it. It's a frightening thing. He's like, oh, I need what this woman is giving me. It's called, right, an emotional affair. And then he's like suddenly very interested in her. She doesn't have to be beautiful, but he's very interested in her. Right? And then, God forbid, it's a slippery slope. And what about the opposite? What about the opposite? Sometimes husbands come to me and tell me, you know, my wife, she doesn't dress modestly. My wife, she's not sneeze. I don't get it. But, like, you know, like, you know, these are some of my students, right? Like, I don't get it. I want her to be modest. And the first question I ask is, well, have you been noticing her? Do you notice her? A woman is desperate to be noticed. She longs to be noticed. She wants to be that fancy doll, cherished, desired. A woman needs to feel desired. Well, if you're not feeling this, if you're not expressing your desire for her, right? So what happens? She goes to work, And some guy makes eyes at her. Some guy gives her compliments. Some other guy. You want some other guy to give her compliments? You want some other guy to say, wow, you're so beautiful? God forbid. Right? Well, you don't want that. Well, here's how you get love insurance. Love insurance. Give your wife what she needs. If you give her what she needs, then she'll feel totally satisfied. Her husband who cherishes her, right, who loves her, who pays attention to her, right, and notices how fancy she is, how beautiful she is, right, and reassures her that he's watching over her. That's the story of what guys and dolls, what men and women need. That's point number one. Point number two is much shorter. Point number two is much shorter. And that is focusing on what I describe as communication and relationship tension. One of what we'll call the gedolei hadar in marital work is a world famous marriage therapist and researcher named Dr. John Gottman. He's Jewish. Dr. John Gottman studied couples very carefully and very intensely and very scientifically for over 30 years. Over 30 years, he studied couples. Now, I don't think there's anyone in the world who's researched, right, done that type of psychological research on the marital relationship. And he's published a great deal, and he gives all types of workshops and seminars, right? I've done some trainings with him, with his school, I should say. And I would like to take a couple of moments to recap and reflect on what he calls one of the most significant points in his findings. Now, again, I told you, wow, 30 years, that's 3 decades of psychological and scientific research about relationships. That's a big deal. It is. But what it boils down to is, one could argue it's quite simple. He described two groups in his findings. He said he would study couples, and he found two different groups. These are his titles. He called one group, right, the successful husbands, right? He calls them the masters. The masters. That's what he calls the successful husbands. The successful couples. The masters. And then the unsuccessful couples, he called the disasters. So he had the masters and the disasters. Okay? And what he did was, in his very elaborate examination of their couplehood, of thousands and thousands of couples, he was able to discern and pinpoint very, very specific behaviors that would show predictability of success or predictability of divorce. And he narrowed it down so scientifically, he could watch a conversation and be able to tell you, predict whether they would get divorced and even when they would get divorced. Wow. Wow. And I want to share two of the, you know, of the highlighting of the major points, of most significant findings. Number one, he developed what was called the four horsemen of the apocalypse. That's his language. I love the language. Right? A horseman, like in the old days, like heralds, you know, like heralding, you know, da 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 da, you know, here's what's to come, right? The four horsemen of the apocalypse, the disaster, okay? So there are four specific behaviors that won't, in communication, in marital communication with one's spouse, which herald, which predict, are predictors of divorce. Okay? And I would like to take a moment to look at one of them, okay? Before I do, he pointed out the following. That the masters, he observed the following. The masters, people with successful marriages, he found that they had a 5-to-1 ratio of affectionate words. That means anybody can ever say, oh, you know, I had an argument with my wife. Everyone's going to have an argument with their wife. It's absurd to suggest otherwise. Every person is going to have moments, every couple is going to have moments of distress. There's no question about that. But what he found was that in order to overcome negative interactions, the masters, those successful marriages, had five times the amount of positive interactions, right? Positive interactions, words of affectionate words and, you know, complimentary words, 5 times more than their negative. And the disasters had, and again, if people were in the room, I would make them guess. What do you think? Right? It's about a 1-to-1 ratio. Now that might sound amazing, because like, what? I gave one insult, right? Or I said I had one difficult word with, you know, in conversation with my wife. And then I had one positive. So I'm even. It's a wash. Wrong. Wrong. The disasters, right, had 1-to-1. Obviously less is even worse. But even about 1-to-1 ratio is a path towards failure. You're on your way to a mental disaster if you have it even, you're batting 500, you're on your path to disaster. 1-to-1 ratio is what the disasters have. So what that means is we need to invest and make it our business that we have as many positive interactions with our spouse as possible. If we do, then we set ourselves up with love insurance. Love insurance. We eventually have so many love deposits, right, in our emotional bank account that, okay, if we have a withdrawal every once in a while, our marriage can handle it. Right? A marriage can handle a 1-to-1 ratio of negativity. So I remember when I heard this, when I came across this finding years ago, it was so eye-opening to me. And this is, again, this is not just some guy's advice. This is literally the biggest and best researcher about love relationships in the world. Okay, so we'd be wise to follow this scientist. That's what it is. Love is a science. Right? The science of love, and invest in love insurance. We might say, what's the big deal? Who cares? Just a card, just a flower, just a compliment. It doesn't mean, what? Where is it going to take us? Wrong, 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 and wrong. Right? It's of the most essential value. That is in the positive. Okay? So that's one finding of his that I think stands out. The other, and this is my final point today, is what he describes as these four horsemen of the apocalypse, and he highlights one specific horseman, the worst of all, and that is what he identifies as contempt. In a word, it's amazing, the single greatest factor, the single greatest contributing cause identified in disasters, in couples that will end in divorce, is word communications and words of contempt. Contemptuous words. That means words of disdain, right? To words of degradation. So basically, realize that the most important, the single best piece of advice that we can learn from this love scientist, again, 30 years of research, is very simple. Don't ever insult your spouse. Don't ever degrade your spouse. Of course we're going to have arguments. Of course we're going to have moments of, you know, of tension. Of course we're going to have disagreements. That's fine. That's okay. A marriage can handle that. A marriage can get through that. There's no problem there. The problem is that when someone is disturbed or bothered and they say something demeaning, don't ever say something demeaning to your spouse. Never, ever call your spouse a name. Again, I'm anticipating it's okay. Oh, that's a big deal. Okay, don't give a name. No, no, no. I'll say it again. It is the single greatest identifying feature of a marriage that will fail. Will fail. You cannot recover. These are my words. It's almost in a certain sense marital suicide to call your spouse a name. Because if you speak with, you degrade your spouse. I'm talking both ways, men to, you know, husband to wife, wife to husband, it makes a difference. If you degrade your spouse, you're putting them in a place where it's like there's disdain between you, this contempt between you. You cannot recover such a thing, right? So therefore, doing something is putting yourself and your relationship at great, great risk. These points that I make today in this presentation are what I call my best shot at offering love insurance. And I'm not even charging you anything. Love insurance, okay? This love insurance is something which will you can earn for yourself and will help you, will lead you towards you towards a successful, happy, and love-filled marriage. Thank you very much.